Okay, we are in beginning chapter 12 this morning. Last week we were looking at the who's who among the faithful, that the writer of Hebrews gives us this list and this background information about all of these people from the Old Testament times who were faithful and lived out their faith in God in various ways. And then the very last part of chapter 11, and we talked about this a little bit last week, that you look at all the things that these faithful people did, and they did those things based on the promises that God had given to them. Okay? But then in verse 39, the writer says, these were all commended. That is, all these people of faith that he just told us about, okay, throughout chapter 11, he says, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. So in other words, basically, they didn't receive the fulfillment of the promise until we did. We talked about this last week, that we received it at the same time they did. And that the fulfillment of that promise goes all the way back to Genesis, and it goes all the way forward until the Lord comes back again. Okay? So it is a collection of all the people of the faithful ones receiving that promise together. That promise being fulfilled on the cross of Calvary. Remember, the idea here is that it goes all the way back and it goes all the way forward. Okay? So, having commended all of these people and their faith and what they had held on to, we begin chapter 12, where he then references all of those folks, and he refers to them as a great cloud of witnesses. He says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. So, as we begin looking at this particular section, probably some of you might remember the ABC Wide World of Sports, as they began their introduction, okay? They talked about the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, okay? And so, see, y'all remember that that thing. So think about that, and because what the writer here is doing is basically giving us a picture of athletic games. That's how he wants us to look at what he's sharing here. There's a story that dates way back to ancient Athens. And the story is told of a young girl who was a runner. Excuse me. And this girl was faster than most of the boys. And she entered into the games as a runner. And, of course, at that time, It would be very embarrassing for boys to be beat by a girl. Mm-hmm. Okay? We still have that problem today, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay? So, the boys tried to come up with some way that they would keep this girl from winning the race, thus beating all of them. And one of the things that they discovered about her was that she loved trinkets. Okay, just had an irresistible love for trinkets, anything that was shiny and so forth. And so what the boys decided to do was that they would each get some of those trinkets, and they would hold on to them. And when the race started, they would go out and run ahead. And as the girl caught up to one of them, they would drop some of those trinkets. And then, of course, she would see them and she'd stop and pick them up. And they did this throughout the race, all the way around. And, of course, the girl lost because she was distracted by the trinkets. You see, she lost their focus on what the goal was.
Yeah.
The goal was to do what? Win the race, okay? But she let the distractions keep her from accomplishing the goal. She had the ability, okay, to beat all of the boys, but she didn't because she was distracted. So there's a lesson in that story for us that the writer here is giving us this visual that we are running a race, okay? And we need to make sure that we keep the goal in sight here, okay? And we don't allow ourselves to be distracted by the trinkets that the world will drop in front of us, okay? Thus, we end up losing in the end, all right? So as we look at these things that he's talking about here, the writer is really trying to get us to focus on something very familiar to us even today, as well as to his readers back then. And we all can relate to that idea of running in games, or, you know, whether you've actually ever done it or whether you have been a witness and cheered other people on or what have you. We're familiar with that concept of the arenas, the Olympics, and so forth. So, the word therefore connects the who's who of the faithful to the great cloud of witnesses. That's who he's talking about here. And he says that we are surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, and that terminology kind of gives the idea that we're in an arena. Okay? You think about these huge football stadiums. Okay? And they're just the whole thing, usually some kind of an oval shape or what have you, and the witnesses, or what are they called, the spectators? Okay, are up in the stands, and the players are down on the field, right? Okay, what are the spectators doing?
Cheering.
They're cheering, right? Why are they cheering? They want their team to win. And so they're yelling and screaming and, you know, all that stuff, trying to encourage the players on the field to do their best so that they can win the game, right? And that's really the visual that we'd have. We today are the present players on the field, if you will. Okay? We are, in a sense, in the game right now. Okay? And so all of those witnesses, they're spectators that are not just watching us, but they are cheering us on. Okay? They're cheering us on as we participate in the games. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that Christianity is a game. We're using this as an illustration here to help us understand. As we are living out our faith, okay, in the world, we have this great cloud of witnesses that are surrounding us to cheer us on and to encourage us. How many of you are familiar with Texas A&M, their football team?
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody know what they refer to in their stadium? They have big signs in the top of the ring around their stadium.
12th man.
The 12th man. What is the 12th man all about? Anybody know?
Those are the fans.
Those are the fans. You have 11 players on the field at a time. Okay? The 12th man are the fans. And that's how they look at it. They say, we've got the 12th man because our fans are rooting for and cheering on, so that's what they refer to as home field advantage.
Yeah.
Okay? But they've taken it to a whole new level in terms of this 12th man thing. All right? But again, the idea behind that is that they are witnesses, they're spectators, they're cheering on those who are actually on the field. Okay? And that's the picture that the writer of Hebrews here wants us to formulate in our mind. Kathy, question, comment?
My question was that when you were asking the people that are cheering us on, they can do that because they've been there, done that, but maybe not all the things that we've been through. And then you said, when you talk about Texas A&M, they're cheering us on, they're the 12 men, but they aren't playing the game, so maybe they don't understand what we're going through, but they're just cheering us on. Then.
Yeah. So don't read too much into this.
Okay. I'll try not to.
All right. It's just the idea here that we have all of these people who have gone before us who have been faithful,
right.
Okay? They're not in the game any longer. They've passed on,
right.
Okay? But they are cheering us on,
okay?
As we continue in
the faith.
The faith, okay? That's really the idea that he's trying to give here.
Well, so when I watch a game, I'm encouraging them by cheering them on.
By cheering and yelling and screaming.
And they may or may not even listen to what I say when I'm out there yelling, we need a pitcher, not a belly itcher.
Right.
You know, they're not listening to me, but they know that you're there and encouraging them by just being there.
Yes. And it's all they can't hear all the things that are being said, but it's think about it this way. It's the environment. And if you've ever been to a major, athletic event like a football game or a baseball game, the crowd can really get into that game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you notice the difference, when the home team is really doing well, there's all this cheering going on and everybody's whooping and hollering. But if the home team's not doing very well, what happens?
Quiet.
It's kind of quiet, you see? But here again, just the idea, the analogy that he's using here is this of a sporting event where we have spectators that are cheering us on as we strive to live out our faith, okay? So, the witnesses then, they provide three important things for Christians, okay? First of all, they witness to the faithfulness of God. Through all of their life's ups and downs, God remains steadfast and faithful to them. And they still give us the same testimony today. If you go back and you look at Abraham, you look at Isaac, you look at Jacob, you look at Abel, you look at all these different people that the writer here has brought out, we can be reminded of their faithfulness. So it is a reminder to us constantly today of their faithfulness. Secondly, they testify to the value of persistence, okay? Through the difficulties that they experienced, they persisted in faithfulness, all right? The audience of the Hebrews writer, which includes us today, experienced difficulties just like we do, all right? So they can testify to the value of our persistence. Don't give up. Remember, the theme here of Hebrews is what? He's trying to encourage these Christians who are discouraged and frustrated and thinking of going back to where they've been. He's trying to encourage them not to give up on their faith.
Yeah.
Be persistent, okay? The third thing it says, they provide the encouragement inherent in any spectator sport. Okay? And that's what we were talking about. They're cheering us on as we live out our faith today. That's what these witnesses are doing. Like the spectators in a stadium cheering for their team, they want us to be victorious. This great cloud witness. Now, if you stop and think about it for just a moment, okay? We don't hear them, do we?
Mm-hmm.
okay? But that doesn't mean they're not cheering. Now, I want you just to think for a moment. What would it do to your faith if you really started thinking about folks like Abraham, who is cheering you on in your faith today? And all the things that Abraham went through, and Isaac and Jacob, you know, all of these folks' faith, if you just stop and think about and just picture in your mind, there's Abraham, and he's watching me. You see? What would that, just doing that, do to your faith?
Boost
me
going.
Yeah. Judy?
Even loved ones that have gone before you.
Yeah.
You know, they, for example, me and Mike, I mean, the faith that he lived continues on, and it encourages me to try and stay and do
absolutely
the right thing.
Absolutely. So what I'm trying to do is encourage you to think about and just even visualize and picture some of these people that the writer here mentions who are people of great faith, and just picture in your mind, when you're getting discouraged or frustrated in your faith or whatever the case may be, just stop and think about and consider Abraham's looking down and he's cheering you on.
Amen.
Yeah. You see? He's rooting for you. And how would that help you to get maybe through some of that discouragement? All right? Kathy?
Do you think it's just the ones that are mentioned in the scriptures?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Okay, good.
No, he doesn't have enough room here to write about everybody.
I know.
Okay, but I think just as Judy brought it, it's even our loved ones who have passed on, and they're,
right,
you know, they're part of that great cloud of witnesses also now.
I think so.
So they're cheering us on. All right? So, the next part that we consider in this is, what is the game plan? All right? For those of us who are still on the field, okay, you following the analogy here? For those of us who are still in the game, we're still on the field, what is the game plan? All right?
Judy? To reach the end zone.
Okay, all right. Well, it's actually to win the game, right?
Yeah.
Okay? But the writer here in the next couple of verses, he lays out the game plan for us. Okay? Notice what it is he says. He not only tells us about the spectators that are, you know, watching, but he also tells us about what we need to be doing, those who are still on the field in the game, all right? There are three things about the Christian strategy, all right? There is, first of all, guidance for Christian training, all right? Look at what he says here. Since we got this great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. All right, that's all just verse 1. Okay, so there is a certain strategy. If an athlete wants to be successful in whatever sport they're involved in, what is the number one thing they have to do? They have to train, okay? They've got to train. You cannot become proficient in any sport, any athletic event, unless you train for it. And the harder you train, the better you get. All right? So that's one of the first things is realizing we've got to train, okay? And so we've got to train hard in order to win the prize. So he tells us then, we got to throw off anything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles us. Ray, I'm sorry.
No, you are. I just raised my hand.
Okay.
I like to look at it another way.
Okay.
That Jesus Christ is the coach.
Okay, absolutely.
He's the coach.
All right.
Let him do this. Because every good team needs a good coach.
Yes, absolutely.
Every good team has to have a strong coach.
Right.
And that's the way I look at things.
Okay, I think that's good. Yeah, yeah.
Very good.
So if you think about, again, the athlete, there are things, if he wants to be successful, or she wants to be successful, there are certain things that they have to get rid of out of their life, isn't there? There are sacrifices that they have to make, and certain, you know, they can't just eat anything they want to eat, and, you know, and all those things. They've got to have a regimen of exercise and all of those kinds of things. Basically, in the same way, we who are still on the field have got to get rid of everything that gets between us and victory. Okay? That's what successful athletes do. All right? They get rid of everything that might hinder them from winning. Chuck?
That part that David used, a lot of examples of today that will hinder you, and you may not even consider, because that's the way the devil works.
Yeah.
Hey, you need to be a golfer because you can go golfing on Sunday.
Yeah.
You need to be a professional in whatever field, and you got to put in the extra hours so you don't come on Wednesday, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where, again, mentoring and the fellowship with the brethren will help, hopefully help people understand maybe you shouldn't go that path because we can see that it's, it could not be the better one for you.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, there what we have to look at and consider is that we don't allow whatever the stuff of the world is that's drawing our attention to become more important than the ultimate victory. You know, how many parents are focused on their kids on, you know, everything about school and athletics and all that kind of stuff to where they don't, you know, they're not involved in coming to church and being a part of it, and you know, so in that sense, they've kind of taken them out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they're in another whole game all completely, but they're on the wrong field.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so yeah, we have to be be conscious of that.
For us to follow the analogy that they're following the wrong coach.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. The second thing that he says is to run with perseverance the course marked out for us. And so that kind of gives the impression of something like a cross-country course.
Mm-hmm.
You probably wouldn't believe this about me, but when I was in high school, I ran cross-country. Mm-hmm. I don't run anymore. it's, you know, where you have a certain course that's been laid out, and that's where you have to run.
Mm-hmm.
So... part of that is you have to stay on the course. You can't deviate. You can't take a shortcut or anything. You have to stay on the course that's been marked out. Otherwise, if you leave the course during the race, what happens?
Disqualified.
You get disqualified. Okay, so you have to stay on the course. We don't get to make our own course as we run this race. And we don't get to make our own way. Okay, God has marked out a course for us, and we need to stay on the course. And we need to persevere no matter how difficult the course becomes. Okay, and sometimes on a cross-country course, you know, sometimes you're running downhill, and, you know, it's nice and easy, and sometimes it's nice and flat, but there are some areas of a cross-country course where, you know, you're going up steep hills and rugged and so forth. The course is not easy all the way around, typically. All right, so you have to endure the tough parts as well as the good, easier parts. Okay, and then the third thing that he says is keep our eyes on the prize. Okay, he says fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Okay. So we've got to, again, that's part of the focus. What is the goal? The goal is to win, right? And what is it that we're wanting to win? Eternal life with Jesus, right? Okay? So if that's what we want to do, we need to keep our eyes on Him.
Yeah.
Okay? Don't allow, as I mentioned the story a little while ago, don't allow the trinkets that Satan will drop down, you know, as you're running the course to distract you. All right? To where you end up losing the race. Keep your eyes fixed on Jesus the whole time. Did I see a hand over here somewhere?
So how do we know what our course is?
Well, I think first of all, it's right here.
Well, yeah, but you said don't. Okay, yes, right. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, this is the course.
It says that he has marked out the course for us.
Right.
I'd like to know. I'd like it to have lights. I'd like it to have carpet.
Well,
I'd like it to have.
But it's not easy all the time.
But just like Abraham, when he says, "Pack your stuff. I'm going to take you to a new place." What did the writer tell us here? He didn't even know where he was going, but he went.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So we don't necessarily know all the steps, you know, until he shows them to us.
Right, right.
But the idea is we need to stay the course. Mm-hmm. If we ever get to the point where we're looking at it and go, yeah, God, I know what you're saying, but I don't want to go there.
Right.
All right? Then we're in trouble.
Like Jonah.
You see? Yeah. Okay. You know, so that's the idea here. This is the course right here. And that's why I said, you know, we can't decide that we're going to go our own course. Well, yeah, I know what it says here, but, okay, and we're going to go our own way. Okay, Judy and then Amy over here.
Well, we have to remember that we run by faith.
Right.
And we set our sight on Christ. Mm-hmm. And by faith, just like Abraham, we don't know what we're going to encounter while we run.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important that we keep our eyes focused
right.
on the prize.
Yes.
Right.
And continue on that way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Keep, stay the course.
Mm-hmm.
Amy?
Okay. And I'm staying the course, but Jesus hasn't come down and told me what he wants me to do, so I'm just staying the course. And
right.
Yeah.
When he comes and tells me what he wants me to do, then I'll get on that path.
Yes.
But like Kathy, I want the lights and I want it clear and told to me what he wants me to do.
Listen, I'm all over that, okay? You know, three weeks and Cindy and I are leaving from here. I don't have a job, okay? I need a job. I don't have a job yet. And so I keep kind of, okay, what does God have in store? What has he got planned for me? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. But I'm not concerned about it. Okay, because Cindy's going to go out and get two jobs. No, I'm not concerned about it because I know that he's got it all figured out. He just hasn't shown me yet what he's got in store for me, and I just need to be patient until he shows me what it is he wants me to do. And I'm not going to fret about it. I'm not going to worry about it. You see? Charlotte?
Okay. Like you say, you need him to tell you where to go. You know, she said she need the lights or whatever. But he's telling us what to do right here. He's telling us what to do in the Word.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're just not opening our mind because we have to have that person, Lily, go to the right. Lily, go to the left. It's not simple like that. But here it is right here.
Yeah.
To me, this is the course. Like you say, this is the course.
Right.
If we stay in that Word, He's gonna guide you.
Yeah.
Because you know what is right, and you know basically what is wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
he's not gonna give you a roadmap to everything you do, other than what he's given you here. What we have to do through faith is apply what he's given us here to our current situation.
And then you have to ask, like we always say, you have to ask that spirit to guide you. You have to ask him. You don't know, ask.
Ask him, yeah. I keep asking him all the time to reveal to me what he's got in store. He hasn't yet. Okay?
He will
he's
show
given
you.
Me a couple of, you know, some ideas here of some things, but nothing has come about yet.
Yeah.
But again, it's applying what he's got here to whatever situation we find ourselves in.
We just want it easy.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
You know,
we want it so. We want everything
laid in
our lap.
Yeah, we want the crystal ball that says here's how everything's going to work out. And it doesn't work that way. If we knew how everything was going to work out, where would faith be?
I know,
exactly.
You say, where would faith be?
No, where?
Carla?
But then also in the ladies' class, because, you know,
y'all know I got a job now, but before that I had some difficulties. But just like after he died on the cross and he was on the road with his disciples and they didn't even recognize him.
Didn't recognize him.
He was right there. Mm-hmm. So even for all of us who want him to be right there and tell us what's going on, mm-hmm. he can be right there. And we are in our own thoughts and like, well, you know, he said this or he, and we still miss it. Mm-hmm. So
we got to
remember that we can be in our own way.
He zoned out.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, as in any race, you're going to experience difficulties. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned just now, we are supposed to focus our eyes on the prize. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the prize is Jesus. And if difficulties arise, we need to ask ourselves, you know, what would Jesus do in this situation? How would he handle this? And to me, this is a way of a signal to show us which way to go, you know.
Yeah.
For example, you know, and I mentioned that so many times before, but it's with me all the time. When Dad was getting ready to pass away, and I knew it as soon as I walked in the house after we got there, I said, Lord, don't let me be here. Don't let me be here. I didn't want to see my dad die. I mean, I was on my knees in the backyard praying for this. But the Lord, by keeping my eyes on God, the Lord told me, you got to stay there.
Okay.
And I came out on the other end of this roadblock with my faith so much more increased.
Okay.
And so much stronger. Mm-hmm. So focus your eyes during the whole run that you have to do throughout your life on where you want to go.
Yeah. And goes back to something that Ray brought up earlier, you know, the coach.
Exactly.
The coach knows what you can do, right? Yeah. He knows what you can endure. He knows how much to push you and so forth and so on. So, again, listen to the coach, right?
Exactly.
Okay? So, now, in all this, we have this idea in our mind, this picture of running this race, okay, and the discipline, the training that goes into it so that we can remain. But then the writer is talking about, okay, things are going to get tough here. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so we need to keep pressing on. Look at what he says as he continues on here, okay? When not only he tells us, fix our eyes on the author, on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, look at what he says, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Look at verse 3. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you, excuse me, will not grow weary and lose heart. Mm-hmm. So, again, we need to find encouragement from looking at what Jesus endured.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
If they crucified Jesus, do you think they're going to be any more kind to us?
No.
We should expect, and that's why Jesus over and over again talked about us taking up our cross and following. We've got to be willing to die. Mm-hmm. Okay? And then he talks about our struggle. Wait a minute, I thought this was just a race. Right? He says, in your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And you have forgotten the words of encouragement that addresses you as sons. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline and do not lose heart when he rebukes you. Because the Lord disciplines those he loves and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. The writer of Proverbs, a quote from the writer of Proverbs, Proverbs 3. So again, what the writer here is wanting us to understand is we need to connect the discipline, okay, that the coach is instilling in us. And sometimes, you know, again, you think about, you know, the athletes out there in the field and they mess up. And so the coach says, you know, run 5 laps, you know. Well, why is he doing that? Is he doing it just to be cruel to the players?
No,
he's trying to, you know, he sees a deficiency in their performance, so we need to do this in order to build that strength up or endurance or whatever the case may be. All right? That's discipline. All right? In any kind of a team sport, if you don't have discipline within the team, you're not going to be successful. But the same thing is true even in individual. If you don't have discipline to stay to your regimen, to train and practice and all those kind of things, you will not be successful. All right? So discipline is necessary. Mm-hmm. Okay? Discipline gets our attention and causes us to do what? You think about the analogy that we're using here. We're running a course, and sometimes we need to be disciplined because maybe we're straying off the course. Okay? And so he disciplines us to get us back mm-hmm. on the right course. All right? So he goes on to say then, endure hardship as discipline. What does that statement, just on its face value, tell you? Yeah, we're going to face hardship as Christians, okay? Living the Christian life is difficult. I mean, think about it this way. If it were easy, everybody would be doing it. But that's why Jesus, as we talked about last week in our worship lesson, that's why he used the calling card that he did, the cross. Mm-hmm. To weed out those who will not accept the discipline to follow him and to stay the course. Okay? So he says, endure hardship as discipline because there is going to be hardship. God is treating you as sons. The writer here is trying to encourage his readers back then and us today to realize the relationship that we have with God. Okay? It is a relationship. Yes, he's our coach, but he's also our Father.
Yeah.
Okay? And he wants us to succeed. Right? So, he disciplines us, and that the sign of that discipline is because we're sons. That tells us that we're sons. Okay? For what son is not disciplined by his father? Okay? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. So if you're not being disciplined by God, you don't belong to him. Okay? You don't belong to him. And we need to understand that you know, so many times we can look at people who are not living a Christian life at all and how successful they are and all the things they got going for them, and we can get discouraged and go, but I'm trying to do what God wants me to, and these people are being blessed and I'm getting nothing.
Yeah. Okay?
It's really easy to be distracted by those trinkets. Okay? And we need to remember, okay, they're not true sons. Okay? They're not true sons. Yes? They may be getting the stuff of the world, but we need to stay the course so we get eternal life. And that's why we get the discipline. Okay? Let me finish this up real quick here. I want to finish this particular section, okay? He talks about the fact that we all have human fathers who disciplined us. We respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may, and I love this statement, that we may share in his holiness. That's the goal, okay? To share in God's holiness, to be with him for eternity, okay? And that's why he disciplines us, okay? Now, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful later on. However, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. So you endure the discipline. I can still remember, you know, the discipline that we had to endure when I went through the State Police Academy. It was tough. Toughest thing I have ever been through in my life. Okay? But I had a goal. And when things got really tough, I'd look out the window and I'd see all those state police blue and gray sitting out there, and I'd go, on June 6th, one of those cars is going to be me. I'm driving out of here in one of those cars. So, see, that was the goal. And that goal I accomplished. You see, I accomplished it because I stayed the course. The last thing here, verse 12 and 13, therefore, okay, based on all this stuff about discipline that he's talking about and the witnesses that we have, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet so that the lame may not be disabled, but rather healed. In other words, do what is necessary to be victorious here. Okay? He's recognizing that some of them are wavering, they're kind of feeble in their strength, they're not accepting the training, and he's giving them a warning. You need to start paying attention and discipline yourselves so that you don't lose yourself. All right? Okay. Next week we will pick up in verse 14 and look at the rest of this chapter. And then on the following week, the 18th, we will finish chapter 13. We'll look at that and finish this study on the book of Hebrews. All right? Those two more weeks. All right? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.